I'm Scott Jennings, and today we're talking about drawings constructability review. Designers design, constructors construct. Executive summary. A constructability review can significantly and positively impact a project, but what is it and what are the third-party reviewers looking for in their review? Here we look at just the drawings, the plan review, not the specs and contracts. What is it? This article, this talk is mainly, I would say, for owners who are trying to cut costs, reduce schedule, et cetera, et cetera. What are the steps that he or she can take prior to the actual bid documents going out and starting the contract and starting the construction? So what is it? What is a constructability review? It is a third party's review, most of the time, a third party's review of the construction documents. It's the drawings, it's the specs, and it's the contract, which brings together the two. Here today, just kind of talking about drawings. So what's the purpose of a constructability review? Purpose: minimize the cost of your job, assess and properly allocate the risk to the contractor or the designer or you, the owner, maximize schedule compression, i.e. reduce the scheduled duration, and then engineering safety where possible. No owner wants accidents on their job. As an owner, why should I do it? Well, the least expensive time in your construction project to fix things that were either missed in the design or weren't properly thought through is before the construction begins. Do not wait till the construction crews are on site. Take time before the construction starts to optimize your construction documents. Because when there's a problem during construction, it's likely going to cost magnitudes more if you're doing it while you have, whatever, 30 guys, 10 pieces of gear, or 300 guys, 100 pieces of gear on the job, an office trailer, all these other things that if you force by your error or omission in the design, you force the contractor to work inefficiently, or you delay the contractor, both of those are going to cost you more money. Whether you pay up front or whether they take you into mediation or dispute resolution and just keep dragging it out of you, because frankly, they're probably owed it. You're going to have to belly up. Why not take the time ahead of time and get 3, 4, 5 Poindexters in a room with laptops to fix all these issues at, whatever, $2,000 an hour versus the entire team out there for thousands of dollars an hour. Who should do my constructability review? Designers design, constructors construct. Yes, designers should go through and check for design. Do we have the right size pipe, the correct thickness of the slab, the clearance on the bar, all these design things. But as far as constructing, constructors are the ones who know why this formwork detail is a challenge, why this thrust restraint system on the pipe is more costly than another method. So have a construction company or a construction consulting firm do the actual review. A lot of owners will, especially private owners, because you can't really do it in the public sector, but a lot of private owners will ask contractors to go through and early price their documents or take a look at them. That is doable, but contractors are busy. Just pay a firm to go out and do it if you have the funds to do it. A lot of times it brings back, tens or thousands of dollars on the dollar, to have a firm go through and do that for you. What's being looked at during the constructability review? So some examples: document clarity. All engineers, I would hope, architects want to produce clear documents, professional-looking documents. A lot of times when we do it, we start just by looking at English, the spelling, the grammar, the font consistency, documents that look professional. Basic math, addition of dimensions, both vertically and horizontally, including elevations. Big. Discipline, coordination. Do the different disciplines of drawings tie to one another? I should have just written on this subject alone, because most engineers and architects don't do it. And what happens? They put that on the contractor to go out and run this new flashy thing that's available on the market today, has been for a while. It's called BIM, if you haven't heard of it before. And basically, it takes all of the utilities on a job, whether it's in a site work job or a building site job or going vertically in a building. It takes all the different crafts, the plumber, the electrician, the sewer guy, the water, takes all of the fire alarm, takes all of these different utilities across the project, puts them in a 3D drawing on your screen, and looks for conflicts. Well, yeah, the contractor has a responsibility, but the contractor shouldn't have to do it from scratch. And that's what a lot of architects and engineers do, is they just say, okay, well, I'm the mechanical guy. Make sure all of my work is coordinated with the electrician, contractor. well, the same tools are available and frankly, probably better, you know, on the design side to actually take all of these three-dimensional routes of all these pipes and conduits and plot them yourself. You, Mr. Designer, you find the actual conflicts. You make the penetrations through the slabs and make sure they don't come up in the middle of a toilet. Moving on. Ensuring specs match what's drawn or written in the notes. We see a lot of times in our review, we'll see specifications in the spec book not matching what the notes are in the general notes on the page, on the drawings. You know, either omit what's in the drawings, that's what the specs are for, or just be darn sure that whatever you're writing in the plans match what you are also writing in the spec. You don't need that discrepancy, that conflict within your documents. Just going to cause problems. Sheet density, balance out the data on each sheet, not too much, not too little. And strive in your documents for an RFI-free set of documents. Lastly, in your documents, do the called out details reference a correct sheet? We see that a lot. You know, you're on page 2, it references a detail on page 5, and you go from page 2, you flip over to 5, and it's not there. Or something else is referenced there. Just make sure the actual details are called out to the correct sheet in which they're plotted. Means and methods. Formwork details. Are the forms easy to not only erect but strip? So ease of form and strip. Maybe look at in your drawings, you know, notes about required time before formwork stripping has to occur. Concrete jointing. Does the concrete jointing facilitate optimal sequence and sizing of the pores? Material types. Is material called out locally available? I was just talking with a guy yesterday who was talking about asphalt and the fact that the designer had spec'd out a rock for a very small job. I think it was, you know, 1,000, 1,500 tons. That's not a lot. Specing out this super-duper hard rock, which was two states to the north, you had to mine it out of. That doesn't make any sense. You know, unless you have some sort of federal grant where they're paying you to do a research project, that's one thing. But to pave a roadway or a parking lot with a special rock, which comes from two states away, nonsense. Pipe restraint on means and methods is a big one in the underground world. You know, what takes the least labor? That's most often the most expensive component of cost in your job. Find things that cost the least amount of labor. I'm talking about things like thrust restraint by restraining gaskets or nut bolt gasket sets or tie rods or thrust blocks. These are all different ways to restrain pipe from moving. Think about ways that require the least amount of labor. Shoring, does it match the type of work you have? If you're, say, forming a floor deck, you know, as far as the forming system that you're calling out or the sequence of stripping, how about earthwork shoring? You know, are you allowing or allowing to be employed the most reasonable ways for shoring? Are the deflections in the soil something which is easily met by the existing formworks, the existing shoring systems out there on the market? Phasing of the work, lastly, is the job working linearly from one point to the end in a linear fashion, taking one step after the next? Or are we, you know, taking two steps forward, one step back, one step sideways, another step forward, two steps backwards, one step sideways, et cetera, et cetera? Are you working linearly? Are you working in sync with the seasons? Or instead of working linearly along a two-dimensional plane job site, are you working from top to bottom or bottom to top, whatever your job calls for? My story. Yes, our firm does this. You know, the guys who are in our firm, they actually have been in construction for decades, and we do a lot of this. We've heard more than once the perspective from the client, just that we get comments from you guys, the constructor guys, different than the ones we get from our designers. So that's probably the biggest thing I could tell you is if you don't have the funds to actually go out and hire a third party to do it, try to lean on your contractor if you can. Oftentimes they're busy too. They want to help, but they don't want to help. They really just want to have drawings already scrubbed and then bid them. But if you have the ability, bring them in to actually do redlining of the drawings. So if you're going to do this, if you're going to do a constructability review, my suggestion, go find the enemy. Go find that guy who's been banging on you as a designer with change order requests and nasty letters, because that's the guy who's going to be out there on the other side once you start building the job. Might as well talk to a person like him or her now and get beat up ahead of time. At the end of the day, it's best for the project. I'm Scott Jennings. Work safe.